yesterday we were discussing. Mayeva mana adhatsva mayi buddhim niveshaya. Nivasishasi mayeva adhatsva. Just fix your mind on me. Apply your intelligence to understanding me, and you'll live in me without a doubt. Now, atachittam samadhatum nashaknoshi mayistiram. Abhyasa yogena tato mam ichchaptum dhananjaya. Someone may say that all well and good, I should just completely fix my mind on Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, always think of Krishna, be completely Krishna conscious. But what if I can't do that? Then Krishna says, atachittam samadhatum na shaknoshi. If you can't do that, you're not able to do that, to steadily fix your mind on me, samadhatum maistiram, then abhyasa yogena tata. By the practice of devotional service, abhyas means practice, mam ichchaptum dhananjaya, you'll get the desire to attain me. Earlier we read abhyasa yoga. What is that? Yeah, abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanyagamina. Purusham paramam divyam yati partani chinti. Practice. There are two kinds of devotional service: spontaneous devotional service and devotional service in practice. So here, these two kinds of devotional service are indicated. If you can't perform spontaneous, ecstatic, loving devotional service to Krishna, if you can't simply fix your mind on Krishna in pure Krishna consciousness, then abhyasa yoga, by practice, mam ichchaptum, that desire will develop. This is called devotional service in practice, the beginning stage of devotional service. In that process, there are so many regulative principles described in the Nectar of Devotion, which will arouse our dormant tendency to be attracted to Krishna. And there are sometimes there's some preaching in some religious group that, you know, just get up and sign this paper giving your life to God. And, you know, maybe someone on sentiment gets up and signs the paper, or gets up and, you know, does whatever it is that's supposed to signify that from now on my life is for God. But then, you know, after a few weeks, it may very easily wear off, because there must be some process. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was meeting with different spiritual aspirants or followers of different spiritual paths, he would ask them about two things: sadhana and siddhi. What is the goal, and what is the process to get to that goal? You can immediately make a shortcut to understanding any spiritual process by applying these two questions. What's the goal? What are you trying to do? What are you shooting for? Is it impersonal liberation? Is it material prosperity? Is it philosophical knowledge? Is it devotional service? Is it merging with the Supreme? You know, what is it? What's your goal? Becoming God? And by what process do you hope to reach that goal? By sitting and meditating? By going to a class once a week? By jumping jacks? By, you know, what is your method? So, in that way, one can understand everything very quickly. So here, the goal is to develop love for Krishna. To fix the mind on Krishna and go back to Krishna. And the process, best process, is simply by spontaneous love. And if that's not there, then there's the process of regulative devotional service. Sadhana bhakti.
The verse 8 is bhava and prema. The verse 8 describes bhava and prema. And 7, sadhana bhakti.
7, sadhana
bhakti.
9 is sadhana.
Nine comes to sadhana. If you can't immediately simply love Krishna, then practice sadhana. And you'll develop, that's the idea, you'll develop the desire. It will become spontaneous by sadhana. You can't fake it that now I have ecstatic emotional love for Krishna, although I'm also have ecstatic emotional love for my girlfriend, my BMW, my this, my that. Bhaktir parasyanu bhava viraktir anyatricha. So better than trying to fake it, then let me practice so that my shravanadi shuddha chitte koriyayuda, that this dormant Krishna consciousness will come out. Any questions? Was that a question? Yes? Karma Yoga? Is that a test question or something? This is Bhakti Yoga, but in practice.
What's the difference between this one
and the
last verse?
8?
We are 9 or 10? We are
9.
Are we okay?
That was another question.
Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Abhyase pi asamartosi matkarma paramo bhava matartam api karmani kurvan siddhim avapshasi. Abhyase pi asamarta asi. Now, suppose you're not able to practice. These regulative principles seem too strict, and this, that, people. Some people say, no, I just can't, you know, I want to, but I just can't get it together. Then Krishna says, mat karma, dedicate yourself to my work. And in that way, you'll attain perfection. And Prabhupada explains that the Krishna consciousness movement needs so much, there's so much to do, and you can help. Mm-hmm. Land, capital, organization, labor. So these can all be, these are needed for any organization, including a Krishna conscious organization. So still, under proper guidance or in proper association, one can use one's energy in such activities and make progress. We see this in our practical work. There are some people who they're not so Krishna conscious, but they're willing to follow the regulative principles and start making progress. And then there are these people who, you know, their hearts are in the right place, but they can't follow. They can't give up whatever it is. Principle 1 or Principle 2 or Principle 3 or Principle 4 is too hard for them to follow. But then they may have some money, or they may have some skills, they may have some facility. They say, oh, would, you know, could you use this? Could you use that? Could I do this? Could I do that? Yes. Mat karma padama. Just dedicate yourself to my work. Do something for Krishna. And the pure devotees are expert in engaging people's energy for the service of the Lord, so that gradually they get caught. Then, well, I'm doing this much, I might as well follow the rules too. There's some story that some people were on a boat and they saw some blanket or something, and they tried to, reel it in, and instead it carried them away. So that means it wasn't a blanket, it was a fish or something. So Krishna's like that, you become somehow or other connected to Krishna and he carries you away. So just like our Jayananda Prabhu used to ask people, do you know anything about hammer and nails? Do you know anything about this? Could you do this? Could you do that? Just get them, they're smoking, they're drinking, they're whatever they're doing. But he would engage them in some work for Krishna. So that's the beginning opportunity. They're doing some work for Krishna. They're in the association of devotees. They'll get some prasadam. They'll get the mercy of Lord Jagannath because they're doing something for his Rath Yatra. So even though they're not able to follow the regulative principles, they may come to that standard. Or Prabhupada, he in the beginning especially, he knew these people are not following the regulative principles, but he would engage them in some, could you help me with this, could you help me with that? And gradually they would, some of them came to the standard. Yes?
All right. Now what would you call that work?
Work for Krishna. I don't think in this way, now is this karma yoga or is this, it's working for Krishna. You can count it as devotional service. You can count it as nishkama karma yoga. Sakama karma yoga. No, because... they do know.
No.
They're being told, well, I'd like to follow the regular principles, but I can't, what can I do? So that's not a gata, that's gata, they know.
But in the case of Jayananda, just engaging people...
Yeah, it wasn't... They knew, I'm doing something. You could say they knew or how much they knew, but they did something for Krishna. Yes?
So... level on which we are going for regulative principles here, this is Sadhana Bhakti, which is described here. I want to ask you, for example, someone has practiced this work for Krishna, so because if you said he will achieve perfection, that means little by little he will advance to the previous level.
To the next level, yeah. Without following the regulative principles, how far will he get? But he can make a lot of advancement. Now he's doing it for the satisfaction of Krishna. He's performing spiritual activity. So this voluntary service to the cause of Krishna consciousness will help one rise to a higher state of love for God. So in that way, somebody who's not able to follow, still he can be engaged. And then he can come to a higher stage. Is that okay? Okay. Yes.
Just one question came to my mind. Sometimes we see people who externally looks like very devotional and very advanced, but still you see, for example, they don't hold the principles and so on.
So we have to ask how advanced they are. They can't follow the basic principles, and they're supposedly advanced, but they're smoking or they're. So Rupa Goswami says that this is the real standard, bhaktir pradasyanu bhavo viraktir anyatracha. Where there's genuine devotional service, we expect that there'll be detachment also. That's janayati ashu vairagyam gyanam chayana. We judge more by that than by. The fancy stuff. no physical symptoms and this thing. You know, hey, this guy's got a girlfriend. You know, how detached is he? Hey, this guy's still smoking. So we can understand something that way. Still the person may be, you know, he's got a lot of credit, just he has a problem. But we can understand something by seeing how free he is from material attachments. Yes?
Sometimes some people give things for Krishna for a temple and they accept to get something in return. Would that be counted as devotional service? They give something to, let's say...
Yeah. That can be counted as karma mishra bhakti. They're serving Krishna, but they're not pure. But they're serving. So it depends, again, how, you know, what you want to do with the terminology. You know, from one point of view, bhakti yoga really means the spontaneous love with, you know, and from another point of view, it means even when you're just beginning, somehow or other, he does some little service for Krishna. That's also bhakti yoga. Actually, all yoga is bhakti yoga, but at different stages. Even just to begin to understand, I'm not this body, I'm spiritual, that's also on the path of bhakti yoga. But it's the very beginning stage. Okay? Atayatad apyashaktosi kartum mad yogam ashrutaha sarva karma palatyagam tata kuru yatatmana. So now we come to the next level. We're going, you know, well, if you can't do this, do this. If you can't do that, well, how about this? If you can't do that, you know, we still have something for you. So, ashakta, you're not able to perform mad yoga ashritaha, to take shelter of the process of Krishna consciousness and dedicate your service to Krishna. Then sarva karma palatyagam. Then, at least, give up the attachment to the results of your work. Best thing is, we've asked, that give it to Krishna. But if you can't give it to Krishna, at least give it up. Yes. Give it for some good cause. Give it for some good cause. The materialist, the gross materialist, he's doing everything for himself. He's working hard to get something. And he's becoming entangled. Ayukta kama karena pale sakto nibadita. He's becoming entangled. So Krishna says, all right, at least become detached. Perform, give your hard-earned money for punya, pious activities. Here's a nice one for the old Gita fans. There are many descriptions of sacrifices and special functions of the pumundi, or special work in which the result of one's previous action may be applied. Pumundi. It's a very unusual, very secret thing, pumundi.
Pumundi. Los Angeles? Pumundi exists in Los Angeles?
I thought it's Italian, you know, Pumundi.
A recipe. Perhaps a recipe.
Yeah, for the recipe. But anyway, it's clear here that it's punya.
Pumundi.
Pumundi.
Al forno.
Right?
Al forno.
Pumundi al forno. Yeah, okay. Yes? Yeah, it means instead of thinking I'm this body and everything is meant for my sense gratification, think in terms of detachment. I don't need all these things to be happy. Because I'm, ideally I should understand, I'm not this body. I'm meant for something more than this. I don't have to get my sense gratification by accumulating things. I can be happy just by performing good works. So here, that can be social service, national service, community service, you know, all of these welfare organizations. They can be, maybe not all of them, but they're in this category. That just do something good. Not for yourself. Not for your sense gratification. Double loud.
Can you say that this is the mode of goodness?
May or may not be the mode of goodness. It may be the mode of passion. You want to do it and get your name on the building. But still, give it up. Ideally, it should be the mode of goodness. Just do it for the sake of doing it.
That's what you mean.
Yeah, that's really what it should be. Then that's in the mode of goodness, or that's how we should do these things. Even if we do it in passions, at least give it up. But better, actually, if you're giving in passion, you're not really giving up. You're making a business deal. I'll give this much, and I'll get that much. You know, I'll get my name in lights. I'll get advertised. Fame means more to me than money.
In the
mode of goodness, one does it because it should be done. The mode of goodness, it's not, here's what I'm going to get from it. Rather, it's, this is what I should do.
Well, the mode of goodness is saying, you know, you want to feel good with yourself. Huh?
Not really. That's the mode of passion. I'm going to do this so that I'm going to feel really good. I'm going to get something. The mode of goodness, real goodness, one does it because it's my duty. I ought to give money to the poor. I have more, they have less. I ought to give to them. Even if I don't feel good. You know, sometimes doing your duty doesn't make you feel all that good. Sometimes it feels kind of bad. Yeah, like...
Arjuna was to fight with the mode of goodness.
He was supposed to fight, but without considering loss or gain. Because it was his duty. So similarly, these things like giving charity, performing welfare work, that can be looked upon as duty. No, I've got this good fortune. I should share it.
So where's the selfishness in it? Because it is selfishness.
Still there's some selfishness because one is attached to the sense that, yes, I'm doing my duty. I'm doing something good for others. So their passion is getting mixed in with the goodness. The sense of passion is still there. Pure goodness we don't really find except in Krishna consciousness. But this is the spirit, yatatmavan, that I should do it as a matter of duty, for some good cause. Opening hospitals, opening orphanages, planting trees, doing some ecological work, something, you know, some good cause. That's better than, you know, hey, let's make a deal. How many, you know, what are you... Okay, good. Deliver them tomorrow, okay? Okay, that's the next deal. You know, it's better than being a money-grubbing materialist is to cultivate this sense that I should do something for others. Better than that is to think I should do something for Krishna. And ideally, the idea is, well, I'm doing something for others, but, you know, am I really doing the best thing for others? What's the best thing I could do? What's the best cause I could serve? Yeah, I'm giving to this charity. They're not really doing some. What's the best charity? Then if he comes to the point that the best thing is to serve the supreme cause, then Krishna.
Is Krishna saying that from the mode of goodness, if you get
Yes. Sattvam Sanjayate Gyanam. From the mode of goodness, knowledge develops. Rajaso Lobha Evacha. From passion, greed develops. Yeah, it's conducive to knowledge. If you live a certain way, if you live a peaceful, nonviolent, regulated life, you become thoughtful. You start to get some understanding about, there must be something more to life than just sitting here by the side of the river watching the waves, watching the seaweed go by. You become philosophical. You start to... That's the mode of goodness. So that's still material. But then if you come in touch with a devotee of Krishna, you're in a conducive situation. It's harder to think when you're just all in passion and, get, enjoy, smoke, drink, eat, grab. It's harder to become spiritually advanced when you're in that frame of mind. It's easier when you're in the frame of mind of, there's got to be something more in life. I mean, why am I here anyway? What's my life for? What am I doing with my life? You're philosophical, then knowledge naturally develops. When you're just, looking to accumulate money, that's not conducive to the development of knowledge. It's conducive to, I've got it, now what can I do with it? I'm trying to gratify my senses. And that's conducive to suffering. So, Krishna's here being very liberal. Best thing is spontaneous love for me. That's the top of the ladder. And the bottom of the ladder is, why don't you give to the local hospital? Why don't you give something for charity? Why don't you volunteer some time and go, help do something? Mm-hmm. Krishna could.
What about these residents of the Dham who are always eager to get money from us? What does that giving to them count as?
Yeah, it's charity. Counts as charity.
Does it count as transcendental because they're residents of Navadvipa? Does it count as transcendental because they're residents of Navadvipa or Navadvipa or now, or depending on their level of consciousness?
You can look upon it as transcendental, but then when they take your money and spend it on ganja or something, it may not be so transcendental. Even within, when we get to the platform of Vrindavan or Navadvipa, then we say, where's the best place to spend my money? is it with the people who are, got the chillum and need to fill it? Or is there some higher work? Some other question? Yes?
How to deal with the situations where a devotee, for example, surrenders to the temple, does full-time devotional service for years, then he gets married, moves out, and he expects temple to help him, to support himself.
What's the connection to what we're discussing?
The connection, first verse 9 is, follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga, so he's serving in the temple. But, just fully for Krishna, but then he realizes...
You're just opening, you want my comments on ISKCON's sociology. I'm not going to do that. Krishna's not talking about ISKCON sociology here. One should try to serve him. If one is thinking that ISKCON owes me a living or whatever, that's a whole different issue. But here, serve. It's all about service. Even if you don't serve me, do some service somewhere. I'm just not up for a, what's wrong with ISKCON discussion this morning. Okay? Don't mind. I appreciate the invitation, but don't mind if I decline. Yes?
There's offering the results of their work to Krishna, and then there's giving up all the results of their work.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving up all the results of their work, but you're still offering it to someone.
Yeah. Not to Krishna. At least you're giving. Giving is better than hoarding. You know, trying to think, I'd like to do something for a good cause. That's better than thinking, you know, I'm the good cause. You know, gradually one will be elevated. No. Prabhupada, there's plenty of people putting an emphasis on that. There's people spending billions of dollars. You know, the charity industry is, one of the largest businesses in America. It's a huge thing. There's people who get, like, 7-digit salaries, I think, for, heading charities. So it's quite something. No, there's plenty of organizations already established to encourage people to do pious work, to open, to give to universities and hospitals and orphanages and so on. Our Krishna consciousness movement is really on the platform of encouraging people to follow the regulative principles of devotional service. And alternatively, to work for Krishna. Those are our two focuses. Spontaneous love for Krishna, that has to develop of its own accord by following the regulative principles. There's no question of doing something. It will come. It will come. So our focus there is on educating people, engaging them in following the regulative principles of devotional service, so that they will develop this desire, and encouraging that desire to attain Krishna, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. And for those who can't do that, encouraging them, no, support the Krishna consciousness movement. And for others, all right, do some good work. But for that's really, we've lost a lot of interest now, Yeah, do something. We don't preach to people, go out and help this hospital, go out and help this orphanage. That's like the... If we fail to engage them in some Krishna conscious work, all right, do something good.
Last resort.
But that's not our program. Yeah, this is the way to engage people in devotional service. Get them giving to the universities. Get them giving to the hospitals. We're not enthusiastic. But still, we recognize something is better than nothing.
When you engaged in passion,
loud.
When you engage the mode of passion, then the greed develops.
Mm-hmm.
Greed is a mode of ignorance, right?
Passion.
And greed is also passion.
Yeah, we'll come to that in coming chapters. Any other questions here?
Even though one may give up the results, if he's serving a more or less questionable charity, doesn't he have to also incur some of the karma?
Yeah, that will come to also. Charity in the mode of goodness, charity in the mode of passion, charity in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, Krishna says, yatatmavan, try to be self-situated. And naturally, we try to encourage people to give best charity. And the best charity, therefore, we really come to, again, Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, people give to charity, but then sometimes it's not the best charity. An unsuitable person at an unsuitable place at an unsuitable time, given grudgingly, yeah, here, take something. That's charity in the mode of ignorance. One doesn't get much benefit from that. Yes?
So, this which you described in this verse is not devotional service?
No. not really devotional service. It's just a little conducive. If there are impediments to accepting Krishna consciousness, one may try to give up the results of actions. In that respect, social service, community service, sacrifice for one's country may be accepted so that someday one may come to the stage of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That's where that is. Okay? Ready for the next verse? Shreyo hi gyanam abhyasaj gyana dhyanam vishishyate dhyanat karma palatyagas tyagach chantir anantaram. So, if you can't do this, then engage yourself in, if you can't take to this practice, engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge is meditation. Better than meditation is renouncing the fruits of action, for by that renunciation one can attain peace of mind. I found this verse fairly confusing. It seemed to me that there was some maybe an editorial question about how correct it was, how well it was stated, the order in which things go. And so I wrote to Prabhupada about it. Do you have that letter called up already? Look up supersession. Here, just hand it to me. You don't mind. You're not attached to your computer, are you? You're not attached to your dual-core mobile performance Guri gateway Jan computer.
Gurijan also comments on this.
Okay. Here's the letter, 17 March, 1971. This is when I was editing Bhagavad Gita, or helping edit as production manager, really. You don't mind if I put a little more sunlight into things, do you? Burn up your battery a little faster. Regarding your questions, 12:12, the ultimate point is to come to the stage of loving Krishna. And all other indirect processes are subsidiary. We are concerned here with approaching Krishna by the direct process of devotional service. Independent of Krishna consciousness, the cultivation of knowledge, work, meditation, and renunciation are of no value, or the proud achievements of the atheists or less intelligent class of men. In this connection, the term knowledge is mental speculative theorizing up to the stage of Brahma-gyan, or impersonal conception of the absolute truth, especially such knowledge as it is concerned with various views of the causal and effective material phenomena is of no importance in the matter of spiritual realization or God consciousness, which is transcendental to the realm of sensual, mental, and intellectual activities. So, the order of supersession of these various indirect processes for approaching the absolute truth is not as much important as fixed understanding of the exalted position of devotional service rendered directly to Krishna. So Prabhupada said, especially said, don't even worry about the order. The main thing is there's direct and indirect direct devotional service, and then all these indirect methods, developing knowledge, giving, doing some work, doing this, doing that. Prabhupada said they're all indirect.
What kind of knowledge to be developed?
Brahma-gyan. impersonal understanding.
And they cannot read instead of that, they cannot read Bhagavad Gita?
Huh?
To develop that knowledge?
That's also part of devotional service.
Then it would be already direct, no?
Can be. Yeah. Yeah, the knowledge indicated here is, all right, develop knowledge. You know, I'm not this body, I'm spirit, soul, I'm something, maybe I'm that, I'm one with. But better than that impersonal knowledge is meditation. And by meditation, one will give up the results of one's work. And by giving up, one attains peace.
Meditation means real dhyana yoga.
Yeah, dhyana, probably, let's see. Prabhupada mentions ahangroha pasana, even that's meditation. But that's not very good. Let's see what...
Connection to the spirit.
Huh? You have to speak double loud because you're way in the back.
Meditation means connecting to the spiritual.
Yeah. Let's see. I think Vishwanath talks about this. Okay, he says that meditation means remembering Krishna. Interesting, he's got a whole take on this. By becoming fixed in meditation at the bhava stage, one becomes repelled by liberation, takes it as insignificant, as mentioned in Nectar of Devotion, Moksha Lagu Krit. The Prabhupada reads these as subsidiary methods. That's his point. And he says it doesn't even matter very much what the order is. The point is that we want to become attached to direct devotional service. Mm-hmm. Is it? I get stopped here because basically when I asked about it, Prabhupada said, don't worry about it.
You look in Burujan's book and
let's look in Burujan's book.
He says, it's not referring to 11. It's 11 is kind of like in its own category, this material.
Yeah, I read it that way too. It's just
whereas the others, you know, the 8, 9, and 10,
he says that if you cannot take to this practice, refers to the practice of karma yoga in text 10, not the practice of giving up for a good cause described in text 11. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Knowledge refers to Brahmagyan, knowledge of the soul. Meditation suggests yogic meditation by which one will realize the super soul. That makes sense. So the sequence he has is perfected devotional service in text 8, always remembering Krishna, then devotional service in practice, performing sadhana, engaging in activities to fix the mind on Krishna, temple life and so on, then karma yoga, working with detachment and offering Krishna the fruits. This awards actual peace.
strange because it's...
And then there's lower than karma yoga, meditating and cultivating knowledge, still lower than Brahma Gyan, is what's in text 11. Just, you know, with detachment, offering the fruit, not to Krishna, but to someone.
No, it's not in order.
It doesn't appear to me. Or yes. Though he quotes Prabhupada in the purport. Devotional service is the direct method. The other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities. Then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then meditation, then understanding the super soul, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can go either directly or step by step. That's pretty clear.
That's the other. Translating in the word for word translation, he says better than this practice that in relation to text 11 is to engage yourself in knowledge.
Yeah, except Gurujan says that this practice means text 10, not text 11. Something else? Yes?
Nowadays, it's anyway not possible to follow this meditation.
Yeah.
The knowledge also.
It may be better, but it's not easy. The conclusion is, hey, why don't you just take the devotional service? You know, instead of messing around with all these subsidiary, you know, well, which is better, this or that, which would you think is better for my spiritual life, to give to the hospital or give to the university? You know, why don't you scrap all that and just chant Hare Krishna and do some service? The direct process is recommended. Mm-hmm. So many indirect processes, but they're not going to help us for so much.
So this is what he's emphasizing here?
Your Prabhupada's... Hmm?
Is that what he's emphasizing, Krishna's emphasizing here? Like, he's explaining the subsidy...
That's what Prabhupada's emphasizing. Yeah, here he's talking about, well, better than this is that. Better than practicing, just giving up the fruits of activities, is knowledge. Better than knowledge is meditation. You know, you're not just speculating, but you're focusing your mind. And by focusing the mind, you'll become detached from the fruits of your activities. And in that way, you'll attain peace of mind. Is that okay? I confess to finding this sequence a little still confusing. Prabhupada said, don't worry about it. He's the one... You know, I mean, I'm the one he said that to, so I'm not going to worry about it very much.
I just may worry more.
You might have got a better explanation from someone who did worry about it, but since I was told not to worry about it, I'm not.
You follow.
Since I'm not, I'm not going to get you into worrying about it either.
You got an instruction.
I got an instruction. I'm not going to worry about it. Doesn't matter so much the specific order of supersession. What matters is there's a direct process and there's this indirect stuff in whatever order. It's not all that helpful. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we've completed the section where this discussion is. First, we had a discussion of what's better, impersonal or personal. We got our answer to that. Then we got Krishna's direction, that on how to surrender to him, fix the mind on him. And then we got some concessions. Well, if you can't do that, here's something else you can do. If you can't do that, well, here's something else you could do. But now he's going to spend the rest of the chapter talking specifically about the devotee of Krishna and the qualities found in Krishna's devotee. He's not going to talk about the good qualities of the person who opens a hospital or gives to the Red Cross or who does this or that. he's specifically going to focus on the qualities of a devotee. Adveshta sarvabhutanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankara samadukha sukakshami santushta satatam yogi yatatma driddhanishchayaha mayarpitamano buddhir yomadbhakta samepriya. This is the theme that's going to come now in all these verses. Yomadbhakta samepriya. The person who is my devotee, who has such qualities, is very dear to me. Hare Krishna. You want to sit and listen? You're welcome. Estamos hablando. No importa si quiere, puedes sentarse y, y escuchar, pero hablamos en inglés, so
okay.
Quizás no es tan atractivo.
Ya, no entiendo.
Claro. Okay. Hare
Krishna.
De nada. So Adveshta, Sarvabhutana. The first quality of a devotee, he's not envious. Nirmatsaranam satam. Not envious of anyone, of any living being. Or we discuss this word envious. Dveshta means like hateful also. What's the word? Yeah, hateful is okay. It doesn't have it in for anyone. Adveshta. Prabhupada uses envy in this rather special way. Adveshta sarvabhutanam. Not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. Maitra. Maitra and Karuna. Karuna means compassionate. Karuna, Maitra is with equals, and Karuna is especially to those who are less fortunate. Karuna means compassion. We're not compassionate to our superiors, we're compassionate to our to those less fortunate than we are. So Prabhupada explains that a materialist, he's envious of his superior, he fights with his equals, he scorns those who are beneath him. But a devotee makes friends with those who are on an equal platform. He honors and respects those who are higher, and he's compassionate to those who are on a lower platform or less fortunate platform. So, Maitra, Karuna, Evacha, Nirmama, Nirahankara. Nirmama means that a devotee doesn't attach much importance to the pains and trouble pertaining to the body because he knows that he's not the material body. He doesn't identify with it. So, Nirmama, nothing is mine, not even this body. And Nirahankara, I'm not this body. Nirmamo, you find this a lot in Vedic literature together. Nirmamo, Nirahankara.
This is,
I'm not this body and this is not mine. Janasya mohoyam aham maam eti. Under illusion one thinks, I'm this body and this is mine. And a devotee, just the opposite. Nirmamo, Nirahankara.
Yes, and, that in 271. Nirmamo, Nirahankara. A person has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego. He alone can attain real peace.
So who is that person? Now in the 12th chapter it becomes more clear. A devotee is the person who has these qualities. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvayagunaistatra samasatesu. Anyone who's engaged in the devotional service of Krishna develops all the good qualities of the demigods. Samadukha sukakshami. Samadukha sukha means he's equal in happiness and distress. He's not over the moon when there's happiness, and he's not under the, I don't know what you'd be under the clouds when there's distress. when there's happiness or distress, he just goes on thinking of Krishna and tolerating whatever there may be. Kshami, forgiving. He's forgiving. Forgiveness is a great quality. So a devotee has this quality. And anyway, because he's thinking of Krishna, he's not thinking of his own prestige or this or that. So he's forgiving, Kshami. But I'm surprised, forgiving. Really, Kshami usually means tolerance.
It's here, tolerance. Oh, it's the word for word.
Word for word, it's forgiving.
But in the translation.
But here it's tolerant.
Yeah.
I suspect maybe there's something going on there. Kshama means tolerance. So he's tolerant, and Prabhupada explains that. He's tolerant and santushta. He's always satisfied with whatever comes. He doesn't endeavor for much to achieve something, so he's always happy. And satatam yogi. He's a completely perfect mystic because he's fixed in the instructions received from the spiritual master. So satatam yogi. He's always engaged in devotional service, or he's always a perfect mystic. Yatatma, dridha nishchaya. He's self-controlled, he's determined. Prabhupada says because he's self-controlled, he's determined. If you don't control your senses, it's harder to be determined. This sense gratification saps our determination. So he's self-controlled and determined, and mayarpita mano buddhi, his mind and intelligence are dedicated to me, Krishna says. And Prabhupada says such a standard of devotional service is undoubtedly very rare, but a devotee becomes situated in that stage by following the regulative principles of devotional service. Even if we may not have these qualities, if we follow the regulative principles of devotional service, gradually we can expect these qualities to develop. Other questions? Yes?
When we consider that At least, on a certain level, devotees don't always have these qualities, and conversely, non-devotees may be seen to have some of these qualities.
Harava paktasya kato muhadvina. If he's not a devotee, what good quality does he have? Manoratena asati davatobihi. Because his mind is not fixed in the devotional service of the Lord, those good qualities can disappear in an instant, and they're not really counted. Just like sometimes in America you find these people, they're like polite, well-dressed, soft-spoken, generous, friendly, and they're the head of the mafia.
Very diplomatic.
You know, so those good qualities get discounted heavily. Because he's a criminal. So anyone who's not engaged in the devotional service of Krishna is a criminal, really. Anyone who's not engaged in, who's not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, is more or less a criminal. So then the fact that he's, you know, he's nice to kids, or that he feeds the local pigeons, or you know, whatever it is. You know, those good qualities are heavily discounted because the guy's a gangster. Mm-hmm. What good qualities does the gangster have?
Hitler was a good family.
Yeah, he's a good family man or something, you know.
He's a vegetarian
or, you know, whatever. No, Hitler wasn't a vegetarian. No, not true. Not true. Mythology. Mythology. But there's so many people, they have some good qualities, but it's all shot to hell because of, you know, they're criminals. So, just like Al Capone, you know, he couldn't understand, you know, who Al Capone was? He was like the leading gangster in the 30s or something.
Yeah.
You know, one of these guys who arranged for cement feet for people and throw them in the river and, you know, all this kind of heavy, heavy stuff. And then they finally caught up with him and put him in jail. And he complained that he was being, you know, unjustly treated unjustly. He said, I just tried to give the people of Chicago a good time. Yeah, because he was supplying liquor illegally. And, you know, why were they picking on me? I was just trying to give the people of Chicago a good time. You know, but your good qualities are not counted because you're a gangster. You're a gangster. So, Harava Bhaktasya, if you're not a devotee of the Lord, Kutab Mahadguna, what good qualities do you have? Give me a break. Don't tell me about your good qualities. Or just like take Duryodhana. He had some good qualities. He was an excellent club fighter. He was actually a very capable kshatriya. He could be very generous He could be very, you know, a lot of good things could be said about him. But what was the problem? He was a demon. Then all of his good qualities were spoiled. Namam duskritana mudha. If you don't surrender to me, then you become a duskritana. Your kriti, your meritorious activity, is spoiled. Why? Because you're disconnecting yourself from Krishna. If I disconnect myself from the truth, then I'm living in a lie. If I'm living in a lie, then what does it matter that, you know, I'm a good guy? Are you going to drag this organization into this again?
No. It's just very brief. Very brief is a practical one. So, say, for example, let's take ISKCON for instance, and I'm just putting my company where I was working. So, here we had all the meat eaters, everybody was there, black, white, red, everybody. But somehow or the other, the atmosphere was very friendly whenever we met. Or, you know, I never saw any sort of problems whatsoever. On the other hand here...
What company did you work for?
Mark and Spencer.
Oh, Mark and Spencer, okay, right.
So there, the goal was, we had a goal, so retail business.
Yeah.
And whenever we met, the atmosphere was very warm, no problem.
Yeah, not now warm, friendly people
who
are busy selling junk to the British public.
Yeah,
enthusiastic.
And
earning money for sense gratification.
Doing a marathon.
On the other hand, like an institution, where once you join an institution, of a spiritual institution, where everything should be peaceful and everything, I find many times every temple there is some conflicting, like, you know, you can't get close to each other, so, you know, there is something which I fail to understand. On the other end, if it's a Christmas, we all met together, love for us. Now, can you explain?
Yeah, maybe I should go get a job at Mark and Spencer.
No. Then we have to follow you.
this is the effect of Kali?
It would be very interesting to do a sociological analysis of ISKCON and see what kind of people it attracts and what kind of backgrounds they have and how they change in the society and what the social dynamics are and so on and so on and so on. One practical observation is your Marks and Spencer guys come together, they work together for 6 or 8 hours a day, then they go home. You know, they don't have much of an investment in what happens in the office. It's not their life. You know, this guy wants to do it this way, all right, he's doing it that way, I'll do it. You know, it's like nothing matters there. I punch the clock, I punch in, I punch out, at the end of the day I get my, you know, however much I earned, and I'm done with it. I go home and do other things. It's not my life. But in ISKCON you find that people have dedicated their whole existence. So when there's a difference of opinion about something, you know, it's your life. Mm-hmm. So therefore, conflicts tend to be stronger. That's from sociologists. I don't claim credit for an original idea there. But when people dedicate their lives to something and they're, you know, all working for that cause, then when conflict arises in such a group, it tends to be stronger because it's about what means the most to everyone in the group. Marks and Spencer, you know, what does it matter if we mark it up 20% or we mark it up 22%? You know, we'll argue about it and, you know, it should have been 20%. You know, then it's over. Or we, you know, say, all right, have it your way, 22%. You know, what do we care? We're going to get paid either way.
When it comes into difficulty, then they also start to grow.
Yeah. And
what's that?
When it comes into difficulty with the company, then they also get, then it's also about their life, and then they start to struggle with each other.
Well, a company, you know, really, they're working for the company just because the company gives them money. If the company didn't give them any money, they wouldn't come at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the success or failure of the company is not of ultimate significance to them. As long as there's another job available. In fact, I'll for all the nice guys at Marks and Spencer's, you know, if somebody offers me a better deal, I'll go someplace else. In fact, somebody offers me a good deal to tell them what I learned at Marks and Spencer's, I'll do that too. You know, come over to us and let us know what the marketing plans are over there. We'll give you a, you know, this and that. And that. Yeah, sure. You know, as long as I don't get sued, why not? Even if I do get sued, as long as you pay for the lawyers, I'll do it. Pay me enough. I'll tell you another reason why conflicts are strong in a group like ISKCON, because we highly value unity. We put a high value on unity and cooperation. So we're always, you know, listen, if there's a problem, just put it aside and let's work for the better, you know, for the common interest. And if there's a dispute, you know, keep it down. So what happens is that these disputes over little things just kind of get put down. So that finally when a big dispute breaks out, all the energy from all the little disputes get loaded on it. And then you get a big thing. Whereas in, you know, organizations where unity is not as important, where everything doesn't depend so much on having everybody, you know, on the team working together, you know, I have it out with you, and then I have it out with the other guy, and then we, you know, we fight about this, and I tell you you were a jerk for that, and this and that and the other thing. So it's, you know, it's done, like, right on the spot. You know, it's diffused. Whereas, you know, we kind of try to keep the lid on these things, and then every now and then the lid comes off, and, you know, the masala's flying in every direction. There's more that can be said about that, but for that you have to take my $200 sociology of ISKCON course.
Sold to him.
After this, we all go for the course, right?
No, just surrender.
Actually, people outside, although they look that they are acting in a very personal way, actually they are very impersonal.
It's superficial. Superficial. Hi, Jack. How's it going today? Nice day? Yeah. How's it going with you? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, but I really don't know anything about, you know, deeper, you know, it doesn't go all that deep. It's just like, hi, Jack, how's it going? Sometimes it gets deeper. Hi, I'm Susie. I work in marketing.
I saw in Sankirtan how sometimes I'm approaching some person at the point that he's looking at me, he's making a very nice smile, and he's saying, thank you very much. So, when you finish the conversation, when you move his head immediately again, go there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. It's, you know, presentation of self. You know, one cultivates social skills, which means how to smile nicely. How
air hostesses.
Huh?
Yeah. Air hostesses.
It's a training.
Yeah, it's training. Now, there's something to be said for that. I mean, there's a value in social skills. It's part of culture. It's part of refinement, knowing how to be pleasant to people, knowing how to, you know, how to deal in social situations, how to, you know, what to say when somebody says, hi, pleased to meet you, and, you know, to say something other, yeah, what's so good? Okay. Something to be said for these social things, but they're superficial. What counts a lot more than your superficial social skills is your dedication to the cause. That's, you know, in the military, you know, they might have some general who's, you know, he's like Jake's like a, as they tend to be, you know, crusty and not the most social kind of guy, and kind of guy that rubs everybody else the wrong way. The guy's a damn brilliant general. And completely sold, you know, he'll give his life for his country. Well, okay, then, you know, if he doesn't know how to smile and doesn't smile enough, that's not, you know, what generals are for anyway. You know, if that's what we want, we'll hire an air hostess. But a genuine devotee of Krishna will genuinely develop all of these good qualities. It's not like he just learns how to shine a smile at people and pretend to be friendly. He's actually the best friend of everyone. There was some, for a while, that on television back in the 60s, they had these doctor shows, you know, where the hero was a doctor. Yeah. And there were two of them that were big. One, the guy was a real soft-spoken, real nice guy. And the other, the competing show from the other network, the guy was kind of a tough bird. You know, he was like, he was tough, kind of a tough guy. But the equal point was that they were both, like, you know, living for their patients. You know, both the nice, soft-spoken guy and the guy who was, like, tough and mean and, you know, could, you know, just take anything and dish it out also when required, you know. You know, shape up or get out of the operating room. They were both completely dedicated to the welfare of their patients. That's more important than having a nice bedside manner or being, you know, now doctor should have a nice bedside manner, but if he doesn't, but he's a fantastic surgeon and he'll give his, you know, his life for you, what counts more? So, coming again to the point that a devotee actually develops the deepest sympathy for all living beings, not just superficially, that, oh, you scratched your finger, oh, but he really sees the deepest problems that the living entity has and feels compassion and wants to help the person. He may even apparently be aggressive, you know. Listen, just take this book home, okay? You know, you'll like it, all right? You know, why is he giving me such a hard time? You know, the same reason that a doctor goes into the, you know, gives you a hard time and makes you feel bad by sticking something in your arm.
After saying it to the doctor.
Now, the best book distributors are the ones who know how to make people feel good and sell the book. You know, the best doctors are the ones who have this wonderful bedside manner and know how to stick the needle in your arm. But the real, we go deep. We look and see what are the real deepest qualities that are there in a devotee. And we also expect that other good quality, the other good, you know, that it will manifest itself. He'll become a saintly person. If you look at the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what saintly persons they were. Rupa Goswami said, Dhira Dhira Janapriya. That even the bandits love them. You know, these are, you know, wonderful people. I don't know what, say what you want, they're wonderful people. You know, even the ruffians could understand these are great people.
Spiritual qualities which are manifest because of the purification, or is
yeah.
it the development of material qualities?
When you're a devotee, all your good qualities become spiritual. When you're not a devotee, all your good qualities are material. Material means meaningless. Now, I should also say, in summary, Prabhupada said, the summary of a devotee is that he has all the good qualities of a gentleman. Prabhupada said, the symptom of a devotee is that he's a perfect gentleman. So it's not that we just look and say, you know, and it's all material, you know. That's for the Marks and Spencers guys, you know. But a devotee also is expected to develop more so all the good qualities of a gentleman.
Maharaj, is it important for us to develop these social pleasantries if we don't have it naturally in us? I mean, I've heard some devotees preach like that. They say, well, you know, I mean...
Won't hurt you.
Huh?
It won't hurt you.
Okay.
A few social skills wouldn't be bad. You know, learn how to be nice to people. Probably come in handy now and then. But if that's all you do, is you attend some, you know, course and you learn how to do a California feel-good kind of a thing. And, you know, feedback to people, you know, if all you'd learn how to do is be a good listener and feedback to people like, I see, so you're disturbed about this. You know,
reflective listening.
Reflective listening and all that. If that's all you learn how to do, you miss the boat. Because there are lots of karmis who know how to do that, and they reflectively listen, and they sympathetically respond, and they're open and flexible, and lots of other things, and they die and go to hell. You know, because they're all Mogam Partha Sajivati. They're living for nothing. But if a devotee, you know, learns some social skills, he uses them for Krishna, fine. Learning how to make friends with people quickly. Very useful skill when you're trying to distribute literature on the street. It's a useful skill for a devotee. How to, you know, there are a lot of things that don't take much, you know, You could learn it in half an hour, and then all the rest is practice. You know, how to make friends with someone, how to make friends with a stranger. There are ways to do that. It's not, you know, an impossible thing to do, and there are people who are very, very good at it. They can, like, immediately make you feel like he's somebody you'd like to talk to. And there, you know, there's way people who can make you feel like, get out of my face. So if you learn some of these skills and use them for Krishna, very nice. But we should know that the skills themselves or the pleasantries themselves are not the essential thing. The essential thing is actually to have that dedication to Krishna within the heart and in relationship to Krishna, other living beings. It's not just that I learned some techniques from a communications course, but it's that I actually see that these other living beings are part and parcel of Krishna. Atmabhat sarvabhuteshu. They're like me. Chanakya Pandit says, this is a learned person. Matravat paradareshu. He sees all women other than his wife to be like his mother. Paradravyeshu loshtava. And he sees everybody else's property to be like garbage. I don't need it. And Atmavat sarvabhuteshu. He sees all other living beings to be like himself. Not that he's kind to the dogs. You know, there's these dog lover societies. There, you know, so much feeling for the poor doggies. You know, and then they go
kill
home and eat and eat flesh of some other animal. You know, Atmavat sarvabhuteshu. They feel for all living beings. Not just for, you know, our people or our pets, but sarvabhuteshu, atmabhat. Why? By comparison to himself. Atmopam yena sarvatra. By comparison himself to himself, he sees, you know, I wouldn't want to be pinched. Why do I want others to be pinched?
Golden ring.
Yeah. So this quality develops in a devotee. He sees all living beings in relationship to Krishna. He sees them all in relation. This person's part and parcel of Krishna. He's maybe forgotten his relationship with Krishna. I should try to help him. He sees the spirit soul wandering around since time immemorial in the material existence. And he's sincerely Maitra Karuneyavacha. He's sincerely friendly to that person. How is he friendly? That your best friend is Krishna. Not that he wants to be your best friend. You don't have any friends? Well, I'll be your friend. Your real friend is Krishna. Not that I'm your real friend, you know. You need $10? I'll give you $10. Not that he's, you know, thinks he's hot stuff. He knows the real friend is Krishna. And the friendliest thing I can do is put you in touch with Krishna. The most compassionate thing I can do is put you in touch with Krishna. And he'll tolerate. If to put you in touch with Krishna, I have to undergo a whole lot, some insults or some hardship, all right, let me tolerate. And he'll be self-satisfied that, all right, whatever came. All right, so we'll talk about some more qualities tomorrow. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Pumundi, that's really a good one.
Allora.
Allora.
Spanish, Italian?
Italian, but
Italian.